This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Each and every day here on the Jeff Calkins Show, we welcome Chris Harrington to the program. Let's fire it up. Chris Harrington joins us now. Chris, what are we listening to?
It is the Ramones cover of the 1960s one-shot hit by Bobby Freeman, Do You Want to Dance? From a rock and roll high school movie. In honor of the NCAA tournament, which loves its dance metaphors, is a good excuse for me to play some dance songs this week.
There you go. Let's start with the actual basketball before we get to the festivities of the weekend, because I thought your column was spot on from Friday night when you look at the stark contrast between Cleveland and between the Grizzlies. And I think you bring up a gap in seriousness. When you think about the examples of the gaps in seriousness, where does your mind go?
Well, you can look at it both in terms of roster construction, which is, you know, sort of a front office organizational question, and you can look at it in terms of roster usage, which is a coaching question, right? So I think it hits on both of those areas. From a construction standpoint, you know, the Grizzlies have this big three, and I think a really good big three, maybe close to as good as Cleveland, if not as good, in John Morant, Desmond Bane, and Jared Jackson. Obviously, Morant's missed games have been a factor this season. But you look at beyond that, it's just a much younger, less proven roster. I mean, they're starting two rookies. Cleveland is, and then coming off the bench, they're sort of, you know, they have a very young, sort of unproven team around them. Whereas Cleveland, you know, they went out the deadline. They traded for DeAndre Hunter when their team was already great. They added him at the trade deadline. The Grizzlies subtracted at the deadline with Marcus Smart, who wasn't working out, instead of adding. You know, they've got these veteran pieces around, Max Strus and Ty Jerome and Jared Allen, obviously their fourth guy. They just have a much older, stronger team around that top three, and they've added to it even in the course of the season. I think, you know, the Grizzlies, you know, obviously tried with Marcus Smart, but they're partly through mistake and partly through, you know, a lack of maybe doing other things. The supporting has just grown younger, and it doesn't seem like a team that has pushed their chips as in as they could have in terms of building a roster around those big three. And the big three is young, but you don't know how many years you're going to have them all healthy, you know, when you hit the playoffs.
Well, I think the other question is like, what were options that they could have done at the deadline? Because that to me was always like the key question. It seems like they tried to push for Durant, didn't work out. They tried to push for Butler, it didn't work out. We don't know
I don't think they tried to push for Butler. I think that stuff got overplayed in the media. They sniffed around it, and it just the forces that needed to line up for that to happen never lined up. Namely for the starters, Jimmy Butler had to sort of acquiesce to wanting to do it, and just as a starting point, and he never even got to that starting point with that.
And the Grizzlies would have had to acquiesce to the money, right?
Well, that'd be the second thing.
Yeah.
A, Butler has to want to come, and B, you have to get on the same page financially. And so, like, those two things needed to happen first, and that was just never going to happen. I did endorse the idea of Butler if you could line those two things up, but those things weren't going to line up. But that's sort of the point. Like, Cleveland didn't go trade for Kevin Durant or Jimmy Butler either, right?
Yeah.
They transferred DeAndre Hunter. And so, you know, the Grizzlies did make an offer for Dorian Finney-Smith. They could have pushed in harder and maybe gotten that done. That would have cost you Luke Kennard. Would that have been a net positive or a negative? That's debatable. But, like, Cleveland pushed in draft assets. They didn't, like, unload the cupboard of all their picks for DeAndre Hunter. They pushed in just enough to get it done. That he was obviously there to be had. There were other players out there. And I just think beyond just, like, you didn't make a move at the deadline, it's just the general roster construction you go into the season with was just too young. Younger than a team like Cleveland, right? So I think there's a roster construction standpoint of Cleveland came into the season raring and ready to go with a team that's ready to win right now. The Grizzlies came in with a lot more question marks. And then from a usage standpoint, if you watch that game, like, it felt like Cleveland was a team ready for playoff basketball in terms of identifying weaknesses and attacking those weaknesses. And it felt more like the Grizzlies just sort of going through their rotations, right? So this is not the first time we sort of made this point after a game this season where it felt like one team was playing a playoff level approach and the other team was playing a regular season approach. And it was a regular season game, but at some point to feel confidence in the Grizzlies, and they played great the next night, by the way, which we can talk about. But at some point to have confidence in the Grizzlies, you want to watch the game and see the playoff level team, playoff level approach. Like, this is what we're going to do in playoff basketball. And it feels like that has just sort of been to the side all season. And it feels like we may get to the point where you never have what I've been calling the dress rehearsal play, right? Like, you look at some teams right now, like Minnesota has sort of gotten it together rolling. It feels like the Grizzlies have never fully put all the pieces together. And it may just be you get to the playoffs and you hope you can put all the pieces together in the playoffs. And maybe that can happen, but it doesn't feel like they've really done that in the regular season.
On the deployment issue, I guess we would say, the thing that has always kind of made it confusing to me is, I know it's easy to blame the coach and social media, that's where they largely want to go. The problem that I have with it is I don't necessarily think that, like, Taylor Jenkins gets to operate, you know, autonomously. Like, it feels like the Grizzlies feel scripted in their deployment of their rotations.
I don't think that's true, honestly. I think when the ball steps up, Taylor Jenkins is coaching the game. And I think he can do what he wants to do in the context of those 48 minutes. Now, do I think in terms of, like, broader standpoint of roster usage, there's communication between coaches and front office about that? Sure. And I think we saw an example today which maybe leads in the other direction of getting serious. And that's like assigning Gigi Jackson to the Memphis Hustle.
Yeah.
You know, there's probably an organizational understanding. I don't even necessarily think I'm not even saying it's any kind of directive or whatever, but there's probably an organizational understanding of, like, you know, let's get Gigi minutes. We're trying to develop this guy. The Grizzlies approach the regular season through a development framework, and that works to their benefit most of the time. So I think there was probably an organizational understanding about getting him developmental minutes. And I think it reached the point where, you know, it seems like, you know, you can judge us by their actions. It seems like a decision was made that, you know, this is not helping us and it's too late for this now. And we got to move forward with what we're going to do relative to the playoffs. And it's probably not going to be playing Gigi 8 minutes in the first half of games to give him developmental minutes. Right. That's something I referenced in the column.
So do you think this is the beginning of shortening the rotation?
If not shortening, be more serious and deliberate about how you're going to use it in the playoffs, right? Shortening, I think, will be a part of that in the playoffs, and will that happen between now and then? That's another question. I mean, Santi Aldama, we'll see if he plays tonight. He's been upgraded to doubtful, I think. Is that right?
That sounds correct.
But now John Morant's out, and so some of this is a little out of your hands. You can't put your playoff rotation on the floor if you don't have it available. And they reached the point where it was, and I thought, okay, now we're about to see it, and then guys start coming out again. But I do think, you know, moving GG down the pecking order and now out to the G League is an example of winnowing this down to what you're really going to do. I think Scottie Pippen Jr.'s elevation has been an example of that. I'm interested in the Lamar Stevens thing. I would not have guessed that he would be in the playoff rotation when you open the playoffs, but his minutes were really interesting on Saturday night, I guess. I think Vince Williams and Jalen Wells are guys you got to take a hard look at now the rest of the way. I think they're going to play in the playoffs, but they get a chance to push their way down, you know, depending on how things go. I think the Vince Williams, Lamar Stevens thing in particular is something to watch closely the next couple weeks.
Yeah, for tonight at Sacramento, Scottie Pippen is listed as questionable with wrist soreness. As Chris mentioned, Santi Aldama has been upgraded to doubtful with the calf strain. John Morant is out with hamstring soreness. And I think that's kind of the other thing I was thinking about with Wells and with Edie. You know, one of the adjustments that we see with rookies is the number of games and the length of the season. And I just kind of wonder, as the season's gone on, does the length of the season take a toll on them?
You know, that historically is a thing with rookies. With Edie, I just think it's compounded by Edie has had to make such a profound adjustment to NBA play that I give him a lot of grace for that. I think it doesn't matter relative to, you're trying to win a playoff game and can you play him or not. That's just something they have to confront. They're going to have to confront over the weeks ahead. But there are a lot of people who look at Edie and say, well, if he's not going to help you in the playoffs, you blew the pick. And that's just not my attitude about it. I'm extremely interested to see what he's going to be in year two. I think he's shown some really promising things in year one, and I think there's a chance for him to make a pretty major step forward. That's not guaranteed, but I think the chance is there for him. But I just think, even though he was a four-year college guy, the amount that he's had to take on in terms of changing style of play, changing his approach to the game, changing the kind of stuff he gets to deal with, to me, is way more profound than what most rookies have to take on. Certainly than what Jalen Wells has had to take on, even jumping up from, you know, Sacramento State or wherever he was to the NBA. Has the rookie wall stuff impacted Wells' shooting? Has the pressure of the season getting more serious impacting his shooting, or is it just that shooters go through slumps? I think that is an unknown. It could really be any of those three things with him.
How big of a development is Ja's hamstring?
I think that's the kind of thing. It's sort of like Santi Aldama and the calf soreness.
Yeah.
That's the kind of injury that you want to be super, or not even injury, right? It's the kind of physical question mark you want to be super, super careful with, because it's a minor thing that can become a major thing.
Yeah.
And I think you want to, this close to the playoffs, would you like to have your dress run of your playoff rotation? Yes, I've been saying that. But not at the expense of losing John Morant because he pulls a hammy, right? And so if you have to, and I don't know what they're going to do. He could play the next game. He could play on Wednesday. I have no idea. But if you feel like you have to set him out for 2 or 3 weeks just to make sure that totally goes away, if that's a real issue, that to me that would be a defensible approach. I think the number one thing at this point is having your guys healthy when you go into the playoffs. And I think you can't be fooling around with a hamstring issue of, you know, your best or second best player. So I assume they will exercise extreme caution on that.
Does the play of Scottie the last few weeks make that decision a little easier?
Honestly, no, because I'm very pleased with what Pippen has done. And I was saying, I think a month ago, that I thought he was being discounted too much as someone who might help them in the playoffs, because I thought athletically and competitively, I thought he could play at that level. So I've been glad to see him back in the mix. I think it's notable if you watch how he's been used in this return to the rotation. It has not been in a traditional point guard role. It's not like the Tyus Jones role. He's played a lot with Morant. When he's played with Bane or Kennard, those guys are as much the lead ball handler as Scottie Pippen. He's been used as more of an on-ball defender, off-ball shot maker type. Even though he had a lot of assists in the last game, it was not a traditional run-the-team point guard. that's where I think he's had problems. Someone who can take a step forward next season in terms of continuing to grow in that capacity. But he has actually not thrived in a, I'm running the team, I'm the point guard. I think the turnovers have been high, the offense is bogged down. So they've been more strategic in terms of his usage. So I don't think, you know, he's someone you say, oh, you can get by without Morant because Scottie Pippen's going to do what Morant did. He's not going to do what Morant did.
Have we seen a lot of, I was thinking about this rotation of Ja, Dez, Luke, Santi, Jaren. Have we seen that mix enough to have a sample size?
That's the all offense lineup.
Yeah,
I don't feel like we have. I know I can't remember looking at that specifically. I have looked at recently the Ja, Dez, Kennard trio stuff, and the sample is small, but the sample is awesome. You know, it's one of those things where. And if you build it over like multiple seasons, like the small sample grows a little bit, and it's those lineups have been great. Whether they will continue to be great in certain playoff matchups, I don't know. But the offensive numbers have been off the charts with those three players together. And so, you know, I'm a little surprised we haven't seen more of it, frankly, to test it out even more. But I don't know about that with Jaren and Santi.
Jaren did return to the lineup this weekend. You were there. What'd you think? How did he look? Because physically, that's all I care about at this point.
Well, he was awesome on Saturday. I mean, he took apart Bam Adebayo, who's a really good defensive player. His first game on Friday, the game sort of got away from the team pretty quickly, and then Ja was sort of dominating, so he didn't do as much. But he still made three three-pointers. He had four steals. He had two blocks. He was active. In a first game back from an ankle, turned ankle, I thought that was highly encouraging. And then he was awesome on Saturday. He looked like the all NBA guy on Saturday and against what should have been a tough matchup. So he played, you know, second night of a back to back with the ankle. So I think that was highly encouraging.
And then we also on Saturday night had Tony Allen's ceremony. I watched it all. My wife and I watched it all on the video. And I know everyone has kind of made this point. It is interesting how all three ceremonies have kind of taken on the personality of each player. But you were there. What'd you see? What'd you like?
Okay. So I'm going to back up a second because you asked me and I didn't have an answer. I've looked it up. The lineup of Ja Morant, Luke Kennard, Desmond Bane, Santi Aldama, Jaren Jackson has played only 38 non-garbage time minutes possessions this season, which is not very much. They are plus 37 per 100 possessions, which is amazing, but the numbers are very small. So they have not actually done that a lot. The Ja, Luke, Dez, which I had mentioned, only 160 possessions on that, which is still not very much, but also plus 33, which is off the charts, 100th percentile. So, like, you know, you sort of wish you'd see a little bit more of that this season and test some of that stuff out even more.
Well, it is also one of those things where it's like, I know this isn't fair, but it's almost like I feel like Jaren Jackson's Defensive Player of the Year candidacy should just be, look at this team without him.
100%.
And then... like, yes, those guys are not great defenders, but it's almost like just putting Jaren on the floor itself kind of makes up for a lot of it. And it's almost, I get now you can't do it because of injuries and whatnot, but it's like, I don't know, man. I'd kind of like to experiment with that.
Yeah, no, 100%.
Okay, let's get to the ceremony. I did not know Paul Pierce was going to be there. We got the note that you'd said Mike had planned to be there. We had storms throughout. It seemed like that impacted Mike's availability, but he sends in the video. But, I mean, just overall, I don't know. I just, every time I watch these things, and maybe it's the era of nostalgia, whatnot, but, man, I just think they do a great job getting different personalities in, seeing the guys that show up, and then Tony having the opportunity to kind of thank everyone for the fact that he is able to have his number retire. Like, I don't know. They're just ultimate feel-good moments for me.
Yeah, and it's interesting sort of the different character of the three. And honestly, the character of the ceremonies have sort of reflected the character of the documentaries they've made, which I guess both things are reflective of the players themselves. It's sort of interesting how it's lined up. Well, the Zeebo thing was really sort of like literally he was sitting on a throne like in his ceremony. And like his documentary was Zeebo 50 for the 50 for the city. And so it was all about sort of this coronation of Zeebo as like warrior king of Memphis, right?
Yep.
So it was very much about him in Memphis and sort of celebrating that. The Marcus All thing was about sort of a bigger life experience in Memphis and also about the team as a whole. That was the core four reunion where they all come out together. Mark, you know, didn't talk a lot. It was more of a focus on team, a focus on community. The Tony thing, you had in the ceremony and in the documentary more of a sense of his life and career before Memphis, right? So you get the Chicago stuff, you get the Boston stuff, pulling that in as part of the story. And then it becomes sort of Tony, the personality of Tony sort of takes hold. And rather than talking for a few minutes sort of sheepishly like this all did, he talks for 20 minutes, more than 20 minutes, actually. I was recording it. It was like 22, 23 minutes from the start of his speech till he said, okay, I'm done. That's my speech. Let's see that thing up there. And at one point he gets loose and he's just dropping, you know, yep. MF this and ish this. And he just gets loose. And I'm sitting courtside around some of the people who are involved in the broadcast, and they're all looking at each other like, oh, my God, what are we doing? Are we on 5-second delay? And it just keeps happening. And they're sort of all just laughing nervously just because what can you do? Like, in your own live, and Tony's just rolling. And it was great, man. The dude took a microphone and just started walking around the stage, get up in people's faces and talking to them, like telling Quincy Pondexter jokes and, like, it had to be delicious for Tony to go face-to-face with Lionel Hollins and only Tony had a microphone.
Yeah. That had to be nice.
He could just say what he wanted. It was, you know, Tony Allen's one of one on and off the court, and that was certainly reflected in the night, I thought.
Did we know Paul Pierce was going to be there? Because, like, I don't know, I kind of thought that was cool.
Well, I don't know if it was ever public. Earlier in the day, I talked to someone with the Grizzlies about what was going on, and I was told, you know, they were actually hoping to have Paul Pierce and Kevin Garnett.
Yeah.
Paul Pierce, Kevin Garnett, and Derrick Rose were going to be the three guys on the one side. It was going to be, I think, Marc Gasol, Zach Randolph, Mike Conley on the other side. So it's going to be 3-3. And then Conley ended up being the last minute, you know, pulled the plug last minute because of the storms. And then for whatever reason, Garnett ended up not being able to make it. And so it was the 2-2. But yeah, I mean, Paul Pierce was prominent in the documentary. And so that was probably some kind of tip-off that maybe he would be there.
Did you have a cameo that you liked?
I enjoy that Benno just keeps showing up at all these things. Like he was not on the team very long, but clearly he really enjoyed Memphis and really enjoyed his time with the Grizzlies. And he always shows up at all of these things. You know, he's not someone when you think about teammate lore and the guys who loom large. Like he would probably be pretty far down the list for most people. But he's always there. Quincy Pondexter shows up all the time at these things. He clearly values his time with the Grizzlies. And I thought the Rudy Gay stuff was interesting because there's a real, like, bittersweet angle to the Rudy part of it. Like, the core four was not supposed to be Tony Allen. It was supposed to be Rudy Gay. Early in that tenure, when people talk about the core of the team, it was Rudy, not Tony, who was there. And obviously that evolved differently over time. And when you talk to those guys, when I talked to Mike Conley for my Tony story, I didn't end up using the quotes because my story was about Tony, not about Rudy, but he would bring Rudy up unprompted when talking about the team. And that team meant a lot to Rudy, and Rudy meant a lot to those guys, and it just didn't quite work out the way anybody wanted it to. But Rudy is always there, man. And Rudy, obviously, also, however it ended, Rudy really values his time with the team, too.
Yeah, and I think the other thing is, you know, he seems genuinely, like, happy for the guys. And, I mean, how much of that is an act? But, like, I don't know, like, you can, when you're sitting there, he doesn't know that the cameras are going to be on him. And every time he's laughing, it makes me feel a little better that at least he can look back on this fondly.
Yeah, 100%. I think I like that he got it when Tony Allen, like, signaled him out early on and then, like, asked the crowd to give a big ovation to Rudy. I was glad to hear the crowd respond with a big ovation for Rudy. I wouldn't mind. Like, I think the team shouldn't be too promiscuous about retiring numbers, right? Especially a team that's never won a game past the second round of the playoffs.
Yeah.
I think the core four is fine. I don't think you need to start sort of searching out and, like, retiring Pau Gasol's number or that kind of stuff. But I wouldn't mind having, like, games where, like, you know, you have guys in and you give them recognition. Like, you know, you're not retiring the number, but, like, you have a Rudy Gay night or, like, hey, you know, Shane Battier's back for this one night and we're going to do a video tribute and give him a big standing ovation. Like, stuff like that I think would be nice.
Yeah, just to thank them for their time and their efforts. All right, Chris, we really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
That is Chris Harrington of the Daily Memphian. Again, go read his work of everything that happened over the weekend. When we come back, Jeff's going to rejoin the program. Let's take a look at the brackets. Great time of the year for everyone. Tigers get the 5 seed. They are champions of the regular and the postseason of the American. Let's talk about it more with Jeff when he rejoins the program. Right here on 92.9 FM, ESPN.
I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new Unrivaled League, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Back on the Jeff Hawkins show. I've got some pretty remarkable news from Robert Owen Jewelers. They are having a, get this, it is a 6-hour, 60% off sale at the South Haven, Mississippi store this Saturday. That's right. It's Saturday, yes, that's Saturday, March 22nd. That would be this Saturday, Jeffrey. 6 hours, 60% off. This is a real deal. They're not marking up to mark down. They're not hiding stuff away. It's everything in the showcase, whether it's designer jewelry, engagement rings, earrings, necklaces, gemstones, bracelets, everything. It's 6 hours, 60% off at the South Haven store, Robert Irwin Jewelers. That is Saturday. Do not miss it. Same great financing, by the way. Up to 12 months interest-free or take up to 60 months to pay at a low APR. But only this Saturday, only at the South Haven store. It's at the South Lake Center in South Haven. For complete details, go to rijewelers.com. All right, Jeffrey. I have been pondering as I was listening to Chris and his thoughts on the Grizzlies. Big picture stuff. I don't know when what will we consider a successful season for the Grizzlies. We'll get to that at some point. I think we can already pronounce this Memphis Tiger basketball season a success. Do you?
Yes, I do. I think. Listen, 29-5. This team played 34 games and lost 5 of them. They win the conference outright. They win the conference tournament. They had big wins. They showed up, and to me, like, the biggest thing is they just proved that it can be a stable, good, winning program, and we didn't ride the roller coaster with this team.
Yeah, I think it was a hugely, it's not over, obviously, but it has been a hugely important season. And now that it's gone the way it's gone, I think we somewhat take for granted and forget what was possible at the beginning, you know, what people were worrying about. Tim Buckley wrote an interesting column at the Daily Memphian. He caught up with the AD, Ed, and Scott, and Ed was talking about, you know, what it was like when he got here. And we didn't know which way this season would go, and by extension, didn't know which way the Penny Hardaway era would go.
Yep.
Right? People were saying, man, this is why I never wanted him to take the job, because I didn't want to have to Larry. That's where we were. That is where we were. And so it has been hugely important, obviously. Now, I have heard the argument made, though, that, yeah, it's great they're back in the tournament. It's great they won the conference tournament. It's great they won the conference regular season. But now they're a 5 seed. They're a 5 seed. You can't call it a successful season if you get knocked off by a 12. You've got it now that you've earned the 5 seed. That's what you've done. The whole point has been to put yourself in position to make a run in the NCAA tournament where you don't have to do something impossible in the second game. They've done that. So isn't now part of a successful season? Isn't in order, in fact, mandatory to have a successful season to at least go ahead and take care of the first game against Colorado State?
I mean, there is. I will say the injury, though, to Tyrese Hunter is part of the story.
Yeah, I think people forget that. I don't think. What the argument I just made, I do not believe. I think it will be a successful season, successful at reestablishing Memphis as a dominant force in the conference. Penny Hardaway taking massive steps as a coach. All of that. It is interesting. We're still waiting for the NCAA stuff, you know, by the way. Like, so I think it's successful no matter what happens. And I think successful no matter what happens, even if you had a success, healthy Tyrese Hunter, but I do not believe he will play Friday. And does that give you an excuse? No, but it does. It's a reason. You look at how many minutes Tyrese Hunter games has played in the tournament and then everybody else, you know, like Moose has never played in the tournament. You know, like you think Moose has been around for forever. Yes, been around for forever. Never played in the tournament. Dane's played in the tournament. But that's it, I think. And so you got Tyrese Hunter, who's deeply experienced, who would have been incredible in this situation, and you don't have him. So, and then what happened yesterday, they looked so dominant yesterday without Tyrese Hunter that I think you can underplay what he means. Oh, they don't need him. Yes, they do need him. Yes, they do need him. They need him against Colorado State, and then Maryland has, you know, all the talent in the world, you know, one of the most pure talented starting fives in the country. So, you need Tyrese Hunter, but I do believe no matter what happens, it has been a success. Okay, second point to people that we have not addressed that has been a big talking point across the country was the University of North Carolina getting in despite going 1-12 in quad one games. Your thoughts?
We also got the news from the New York Post that Bubba Cunningham, who is the chairman of the committee, will receive a $68,000 bonus for the Tar Heels making the field. So, of course, that has sent the internet a buzz. I mean, I did not feel like North Carolina was one of the teams that was on the bubble, but or like to me, it's like I thought there were other bubble teams that were probably ahead of them. With that said, it's like I don't know, like ever, like all these teams are so flawed. You got to pick 68.
Yeah, but there's no other team that played 13 good games and lost 12 of them. I mean, it's just that is disqualifying. And we said this earlier, that there are so many different metrics they use now that they can pick and choose. I mean, here's the truth. Bubba Cunningham, as you just pointed out, gets a massive bonus, or a sizable bonus, not massive for an AD these days, if his team makes the tournament. Yes, he leaves the room. And one of the reasons that the people knew, or the early tip-off, that they were going to, that North Carolina was going to make it, for those in the CBS circles, was that normally they provide the committee chair to talk. This time they provided two people to talk.
Yes.
Because Bubba Cunningham wasn't in the room, right? And so you know right then, oh, you got to have someone else to talk because North Carolina is going to make it. And so that was the early tip that they were going to make it. And I do believe 100% he leaves the room. But everyone is aware... their good friend, and I'm sure he has relationships with a lot of them, just walked out of the room. Maybe he's not close to all of them, but he has relationships with all of them. He goes to dinner with them. He spends time with them. You know what else he does? He comes back into the room. And then you have to say, you either screwed your friend out of a bonus or you gave his friend a big bonus. And they may not have known. They probably didn't know that he was going to get a bonus, but they certainly knew that he cared deeply if North Carolina made the field.
Well, so should he have to reveal that he gets a bonus?
Maybe should have to reveal that he gets a bonus. I bet it is funny. I bet all these ADs do. I mean, it is literally the last team in the guy is the chair. It is inexcusable. And, I mean, the length they had to go, all of a sudden they're starting to talk about quad two wins. They did great in quad two. Like, it was... You know, and then the team that I feel the worst for is West Virginia. And I think West Virginia is a pretty egregious omission, which I think makes it worse, the North Carolina inclusion. Indiana, you could make an argument for Indiana as well. But I think 1-12. Memphis was 5-1, quad one. Played 6 quad one games, won 5 of them.
I think by the end it ended up being 6-1.
Was it 6-1? Memphis is 5-2 against tournament teams. Like and thank God that carried the day, like, for Memphis. In the end, how you did against good teams should matter, right? And then West Virginia gets dinged because they kept talking about this player that they lost in December. It's not like the Grizzlies, I mean, the Tigers do not get dinged at all, very clearly, for Tyrese Hunter, whose foot was already in a boot Saturday, right? They didn't get good. Nice they didn't get dinged, but they didn't get dinged. West Virginia's dinged for a player they lost in December. I thought that was ridiculous. There were other things that...
By the way, of the teams that were considered kind of in that same tier with Carolina, so it's West Virginia, Indiana, Ohio State, Carolina also the only team with a quad three loss.
Yeah, and I mean, it's West Virginia. West Virginia wasn't perfect in quad. I think West Virginia was 6-10 in quad one.
They were six. They finished 6-9 in quad one, 4-4 in quad two.
Yeah, and so if you have to go to the quad two, because I'm going to say North Carolina was 8-0 or something in quad two.
Yes,
they won a bunch of quad two games. They did win a bunch of quad two games. They played 13 quad one games and won one of them.
Well, even if you combine it, they go 9-12 in quads one and two. Well, West Virginia went 10-13.
Yeah, it's just like, come on, man. Come on, seriously. Whatever. There are other little oddities I thought was interesting. What do you think about Louisville gets to play in Lexington as an 8 seed? Now, I don't think they did Louisville any favors making them an 8, right? And they could very well lose that first round game. But if they win it, they will play Auburn in Lexington, which is no picnic for Auburn. I mean, I think Auburn wins that game. Auburn, you know, had no problem handling Kentucky in Lexington, so I suppose they could probably handle Louisville in Lexington. But that was a little bit of a twist for me.
Are we sure playing in Lexington? Like, yes, you have the geographical closeness. But aren't there a lot of Kentucky fans that are going to go and root like hell for Auburn?
So you think Kentucky fans will fill that building and root against Louisville?
Yeah.
Maybe it's no picnic. They're going to be rooting for Bruce Pearl, the SEC, SEC, SEC. How do you feel about 14? And obviously Texas is the big one there. I think 14's a little embarrassing. There's no question it was a dominant conference. But come on, two? You're playing a whole conference season to eliminate two? That's a little much.
I mean, I think the problem, though, is when you play a non-conference slate and you play all these teams and you've been like 90.
They crush people. I know. That's it. And they should and did, obviously, get credit for that. One thing in terms of Memphis is interesting is that they do all this work and they get a 5 seed. And you're thinking, okay, well, can they replicate that again? Like, going forward, what did we learn from this? Because I think it's really hard to expect Memphis to do what they did again in quad one games in an on-conference schedule, to beat the equivalents of Michigan State and Clemson and UConn and on, right? I think an Ole Miss. And I think it's unfair to ask Memphis to do that every year. But the good news is, if you can't replicate that, you actually can be more efficient. You know, like, they very clearly, what hurt Memphis didn't really hurt them much. But the way you can elevate yourself is, you know, to do what Gonzaga did and to have...
Their efficiencies mattered.
Well, I'll tell you what efficiencies mattered. They mattered for, you know, I think they mattered for North Carolina.
Yeah, but I don't think it mattered for Memphis. Like, you look at it. Most people thought St. Mary's was ahead of Memphis. That was not the case.
Memphis was not dinged for their efficiencies. That's not the point I'm making. The point I'm making is that if you can get some credit for
efficiencies
if you route people, right? And so maybe the path for Memphis next year won't always look like this exact same path, right? It can look a slightly different path. Maybe you'll go. 500 in your quad one games, but you can eviscerate people in a way that you did not this year when you, for one reason or another, when they struggled. But very clearly, they were not hurt by their efficiency ratings.
And their bad losses didn't hurt them.
Yeah, anything else particularly stick out from you from the bracket?
I mean, it's just a great feeling, isn't it? You get Sunday, we go from the Big Ten championship game, and then we go right to the selection process. I thought that was a very good tribute to Greg Gumbel. I thought that was a cool way to start the show, but man, it's just.
And they jumped right into it, man.
Yeah,
bam,
I just loved it. It was bam, let's get to the brackets.
Yeah, no, I thought they did a good job unveiling the brackets. That was all fun, and now we get to look forward to this, and it's wonderful to be back in. And that's true all across this region. Tennessee, Ole Miss, Mississippi State, Arkansas, Vanderbilt, all of them. Everyone can at least enjoy this first weekend. We didn't get to talk about the Bengals re-upping Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins, but they have. They're now going to spend $70 million on two receivers every year, basically. So we'll see where that gets them. We'll talk about it more this week. Before we go, I do want to tell people that if they have memorabilia they want framed, if they have wedding photos, I was at a wedding just Saturday, they want framed, head on into the frame corner right there, 5035 Park Avenue, 5035 Park Avenue. They have been doing it for 50 years, turning photos and memorabilia into memories, lasting memories that you will have on your wall and then have to pass down. It is the Frame Corner, 5035 Park Avenue, framecornermemphis.com. Jeffrey, what is next on 92.9?
Jeff, here's what's coming up next on Jason and John. The guys, of course, will be live to react to everything coming up on the show. Coming up with the tournament. Tony Madlock's going to join them at 11:25. Cobb's going to be with me today. We'll offer reaction. Jason Munn's scheduled to appear with us as well. Gabe, of course, at 5:00. Or Gabe and Cobb.
Thanks for listening, buddy. We got to get out of here. Back tomorrow for an hour work is done.